This is Jan Cox, talk number 680, recorded on July 30th, 1990.
Welcome again to some further examination of these five-dimensional x-rays of life here on this planet. And continuing a piece of what we were talking about, having to do with how talk is the measure and the medium of growth in man's singular secondary world, the one that this produces, in conjunction with the fact that men are continuing attempt by talk to mark off territory in other people's psyche. This as opposed to not this. And specifically, I was going to ask you to consider how words, with even some more examples, actually become more than they are from one quite valid view. An example I was about to give brings to mind also something else. I continue to receive some notice from people just partially exposed to this kind of stuff that even make comments such as how much they enjoy some of the things that we note here and how they get to laugh at people. And I got to remind you, don't I? That, you know, CAT scans and x-rays and the general diagnoses of people's condition, even if they're healthy, of their general condition is no fit source for sarcasm or derisive laughter. Anybody, you know, if you're a neophyte with this, I guess it's all right for a second, but I would like to disabuse everybody that this is in any form laughing at someone's x-rays. I repeat, even though they're not sick. All of this is funny, but it's not funny at the expense. There's no foolishness going on with other people. But back to the example of a few, of words being actually more than they are, which is, of course, impossible at any reasonable, sequential, three-dimensional level. But heads up and listen. There was a scenario going on in ordinary life of a man, I believe, who was presented as being a financial advisor. And he was giving a passionate report of a new concept, of which I think he was the author, probably had written a book, but it was called something like Retirement Enhancement or Retirement Maximization. Some word that as soon as you heard it, you knew, well, this is up to date. Retirement Maximization. I believe that was it. And if you were just listening, and after he was already presented with his city institutional credentials, that here he is, so-and-so, graduate of the Harvard Business School. Retirement maximization or enhancement, you would think, once they started talking, just immediately almost, that the whole concept, the idea sounds impressive, and you would also expect that, especially as soon as he started talking about it, would just fell right into line, I'm not going to try to repeat it, but what you would expect. But he was presented as a new concept. And so you would expect, reasonably so, now I'm now speaking as the ear of the city. That is, the ear of life. One of its ears. That is, one of its ears listening to one of its own thoughts. I mean, I don't know who else you think life listens to. Is it going to listen to anybody else's thoughts? Whose thoughts do you listen to? You got very little choice. So I'm just operating as one of life's ears, that if you were one of its reasonable ears listening to this, you would immediately expect. And as I said, even once he started to speak, you would naturally expect that what he's going to talk about is going to hold out the promise of producing some kind of new retirement income. And why else would he write a book? Why would he be here on some kind of national level of exposure? But no, no such luck. That would apparently be the only point of a book, an idea, a new concept, his appearance, retirement maximization. That whatever condition you're in, financially, facing retirement, planning your retirement, that this concept, and I'm sure that's what he called it, this concept will maximize enhance. And so there's only one reasonable, point to this. That is, what he is going to say is in some way going to produce additional retirement funds for you. No. But he had talked probably shorter time than I have already. And the interviewer, you could hear the audience. It had fallen into kind of ooh, ah. You could hear the sound of scribbling, people taking notes. People especially probably, because he and the interviewer for the first few minutes continued to repeat retirement maximization. Well, exactly what is the concept of retirement maximization? And he would say, well, I'm glad you asked me about retirement maximization. And you could hear in the audience. You could hear the people listening. We'll assume it's people that knew he was going to be there. Let's assume that. And they wanted to hear it. And so they're going, retirement. Yes, well, I'll be glad to tell you, because many people nowadays are retiring. You can hear people, you know, scribble, like, you know, making a note that, yeah, I'll retire. And they're saying, and the dollar does not go as far as it used to.
Yeah, right there. Yeah.
And so many people who had been planning for retirement 10 years ago, 20 years ago, yesterday, are faced with having less of a retirement landscape than they pictured.
Yes.
And so thus, I came up with the idea of retirement maximization. And you hear, and so you keep waiting. Like, well, in some way, retirement maximization, if I buy the book or if I sit here and I listen to this, and somehow I'm going to leave, and all the plans I've made, the monies I put away for retirement, in some way they're going to maximize, which can't mean just maximize. It's nothing more. But dear friends, it is not. He didn't come out and say that, but I'm going to have to tell you the truth. It was not. After all the oohing and aahing, which did not stop, just because I said after it, it did not end the interview with booing and hissing. But it had nothing whatsoever to do with some sort of new income or new funds or the funds that one had in some way suddenly, instead of getting whatever percentage it is would be the going rate in retirements and CDs. It's not suddenly that by reading his book or listening to him that this doubled or increased at all. All it was, as you might suggest or suspect, all it was a plan about shifting around the funds that you might already have. Or even the funds, if you're very young and haven't even started working on retirement or putting away any, that is to help shift around the plans you might have had. It's to shift around the funds that were already there. And of course, now you can change funds, you can substitute funds, and put ideas, words. But he was not booed. They got through. It was a nice hand. As he left, I could hear people mumbling in the audience. Retirement maximization. You know, what a concept. You know, why didn't I think of that? So it had nothing to do with anything new, fun-wise. That's back to a good secondary, hard, material, exemplary piece of merchandise, shekels, rubles, money, retirement maximization. And it had nothing to do with in any way being in any better condition than you were financially, except shifting monies around. And I'm not going into all the details, but as you might suspect, I listened just a little bit, and I can assure you that even what he was talking about, shifting around, had not much more even three-dimensional validity than it does to trust a weather report into 8 or 10 hours from now. It just cannot be done. But notice the whole concept. I'm sure the man's book will sell. He'll be invited to other programs. I bet now that other people for a while, other financial advisors and people will be thinking, oh, I should have thought of retirement maximization. What a sound. What a concept. But from one view, it's nothing except a reshifting, in this case of funds, at another level, a reshifting of words, of letters. He's put together a new term, wrote a book, he talks about it. And so you can say from one view, it is moot. But may I speak for a segment of life again? Here I go. I quote myself for this segment of life. In spite of all that, I'll be damned if it doesn't seem like progress. Now, I hope I did not talk enough in a clinical way to take the wind out of this interviewer, or out of the interview itself, and out of the man's concept. That was not the point. Because at an ordinary 3D level, I assure you the interview flew just as well as the Wright brothers' first or second attempt. It went as well as any other kind of concept, financial, religious, intellectual, economic, except the basis that you would expect to begin with. That here's a man with a new concept for those of you about to retire, those of you who are planning to retire, anyone interested in retirement, a major breakthrough, a whole new concept, retirement maximization. And you would expect this in some way will benefit me directly. And the only point of benefit me directly with the retirement, the idea, is in some way will produce new funds, and it will not. But that doesn't matter. If you listen at one view, at one level, if you were just being part of the ordinary city audience, you would feel as though, well, I'll be damned if that isn't a first-class idea. And that's as good as any. It would not, if we were really being clinical and objective, for anyone to come up and say, well, what do you mean it's a good idea? You know, what did you get of value, of actual benefit out of that? And the truth was nothing. Well, maybe. Perhaps if I do take this kind of real piercing advice that might have come out of it like, well, as you put away your retirement funds into these retirement plans, these IRS, whatever they're called, look around and find which one of these retirement plans pays the most interest on your money. Oh, hey, now we're getting somewhere. All right, you can call that, you know, decent information, assuming that, you know, you got the IQ of warm asphalt to begin with, that you need somebody to say, well, if you're going to put your money away in a retirement account, look around, maybe check one or two places, just my suggestion, and see who's paying the most interest, and by God, maybe put it in one paying the most. All right. That was about the extent of retirement maximization. But now back to where I started this, surely you do, that in a sense now the words have become more than they are. And there is no way profitably for me to spend much more time trying to get you to see verbally that the thing is more than it was. Because, of course, the inference here being at one level, the retirement maximization amounts to nothing, unless you want to call just decent, everyday good advice. But now, instead of them saying, well, now we have a man here who maybe the same credentials, graduated from Harvard, works at a big firm in New York, and he's here. Have you written a book? No. Any important papers? Not yet. Well, anyway, what do you hear? Well, I just had some good advice for people. Yeah. Nothing wrong with that, but you don't expect a man to show up on some kind of national or even local media and to come on as some sort of expert, and you say, well, what is the basis of your appearance here? What do you have to tell us? Oh, just some common sense advice. Like, put your money where you get the most interest. No. Surely I don't have to go any further and play even the sarcastic aspect that if life got this far into itself, that life would even turn itself and say, hey, come on, man. You know, treat him like Homer Simpson, I guess. Like, what are you doing here? We don't need common sense. But notice, here's where I was trying to retract just one further little bit. The words, the term, retirement maximization, and not just that, but other ramifications. Assuming that's hollow, that is, it's no more than common sense, you do understand that it is more than common sense, because now it's retirement maximization, my new concept. Thank you, thank you. That's more than saying, well, I just got some everyday advice. Well, if we, you know, run short of guests, we'll invite you sometime to give us your common advice. But a man says, well, wait a minute. I was holding out. I actually have a new concept. Yes? I mean, it's not just ordinary common sense. No, no, no. This goes in quotes, the man says. I call it retirement maximization. Now we're doing something. Other than a real example, I'm even reminded some of you have seen that great, I guess it was originally taken, was it not, either from it was Hungarian mythology or wasn't Shakespeare, what's his name? Well, at any rate, the modern version was called Evil Roy Slade. And if you recall, the world's most villainous outlaw, when he decided to retire, he had a little accountant. He had a financial advisor, as a matter of fact. Now I think about it, a little guy with a book and glasses and pencils in his pocket. And so Evil Roy said, I'm going to retire. How much money's in our outlaw fund? And we're going to break up the gang and we'll give everybody a little bit. And of course, I'll take the Evil Roy share. And so the guy goes, you know, we don't have any. And anyway, I think most of you have seen this, if not the movie, the stage play, the original. Well, anyway, Evil Roy goes through, what do you mean we don't have any money? I've been robbing stages and holding up people and swindling for 7 or 8 years now. And the gang goes, yeah, yeah, yeah. And he says, what do you mean I don't have any money? So the guy starts saying, well, you know, there's all these expenses for bullets and this and that. And he says, I'm just going to tell you the truth. There's nothing, Evil Roy. And so Evil Roy takes a gun. And he says, well, what I want, he says, that book is where you keep track. And the financial advisor says, yeah. And he said, what I want, let's see, I figure I need about $10,000. And the guy says, well, I told you we don't have. And he goes, he says, make those little figures you do and put down, make it $10,000. And so the guy, of course, is sweating bullets himself. And so he writes down, you assume, $10,000. And so Evil Roy says, all right, now how much do we have? And of course, the guy don't want to play along, but he has a certain impetus to cooperate. And he says, and Evil Roy said, well, just look in the book. Don't you keep an official book? And the guy says, yeah. And he says, well, what does it say? And the guy says, well, it says $10,000. And Evil Roy puts down his gun and goes, ah, you know, I can retire. I guess it might be reasonable to assume that some of that they did in the movie and the stage play to try to get a laugh. But may I suggest to you that that's just because you laugh at it, it's not necessarily a joke. Because now, as far as Evil Roy, of course, if you're ordinary, you'd say, well, that's just a dumb thing. And he was especially dumb because you can't just write down the book. Can't force your accountant to write down $10,000, and then you go whoopee and throw your hat in there and say, I knew it, and I got enough to retire. Well, no, you don't. It just says that. Yeah, but what do you go by? Well, you mean it's just common sense to put your money where you get the most? Yeah, but we're not talking about that. We're talking about retirement maximization. I mean, that's different than saying we don't have any money. And to say, is it in the book? What does it say there, little accountant? And the guy goes, it says $10,000, Evil Roy. And he says, see, I told you. Everything's fine. While I'm here, I might suggest that some of you have done inadvertently is there might be a subversive, a real revolutionist way in which an individual might use that kind of unreasonable method on himself. No? It's only ordinary people say, well, I'm going to make such and such change. And your own financial advisor, your accountant, the nerd within us all, well, you all, I hate to talk about myself, you all, says, wait a minute, we don't have the wherewithal. We don't have any money, Evil Roy. We can't change. We can't do this. You go, well, why not? All right, okay. It is what would be in a quite real three-dimensional, earthbound, gravity-held sense of logic and reason at the ordinary world that your own intellect says, well, I can't do that. Now, we don't have any money, Evil Roy. Just write down, let's see, I figure 10,000. Write down 10,000, and you write down 10,000. It's unreasonable. It's ridiculous. But, of course, some of you see through the unreasonable and the ridiculous, or you would not be here, that there is some validity, even in the silly little movie, that the outlaw throws his hat in the air and goes, "Whoopee, I can retire after all, I knew it." And there the guy stands, apparently another person, that is the accountant, standing there looking at this book that he just, under duress, unreasonable duress, was forced to write $10,000, and he knows there is no $10,000 anywhere. But the book, the Evil Roy, is the official accounting. A man turns to his own intellect and says, "We're bankrupt, or I can't do that. I do not have the wherewithal." Just write it down. And so, all right, I'll go along with it if you're going to force me to. But that doesn't make it true. It doesn't. Should I stoop to the Grimm brothers again, level, and point out to you that there is a validity, not three-dimensionally, of course, but there is a kind of, may I suggest, a reflection of a more manifold reality, of more than three dimensions, of, take this internally, or externally, if that's the best you can do, of the little accountant holding this book in which he had just written a spurious total of $10,000, but that there is a validity beyond that of then the Evil Roy, the other character, going, "Hooray, I knew I had it in me. I knew we had the money to do this." But from the view here of the guy holding the book, there is no such money. And then from the view of the guy over there, the guy who just made him put it down, that's all I wanted. I started out asking you, look in the book and tell me how much. And of course the guy made a mistake, because he started out and he looked down and he said, "We don't have anything." And the aggressor, the dominant, the Evil Roy went, "I want $10,000 so I can retire." And the fellow said, "Well," and so he wrote down $10,000. And then Evil Roy said, "All right, how much?" And he said, $10,000. I was suggesting that that reflects a more manifold reality, that is not just silly. I guess it's silly at the Hollywood level. How do you think things that ever do apparently get done directly in life, or the things that you may have done to yourself, how do they get done? You didn't analyze it that way. Anything that seems to get done at a local level in an individual lifetime, I would suggest to you, if it's out of the ordinary, and we're not going to stop and go through that, only you would know if it's out of the ordinary. If you did, you did a version of, "Hey, I want $10,000 to retire." And that part of your accounting and your old nervous system said, "We don't have $10,000. And you said, "Whoops, look right here, look right here." And you could still say, "Well, wait, that doesn't matter. You didn't have the wherewithal to do it." "Yeah, but it's too late to worry about that. Now you did it." "Oh, wait, we don't have $10,000. You can't retire." "Well, why tell him that now? He's already retired." "Or at least he's already happy. The deed's done. I am happy. I can retire. Whoopee." That's not a good of an end of an episodic part of ordinary existence, is any? If you can see in a certain way, we could say that such is the secondary, such is city life, so that just fresh arrangements of words can apparently produce new territory. Because that's what's going on. That is what I was inferring by starting out saying, asking you to consider how words can be more than they actually are. That the hold, may we say, chemical, electrical intelligence, ambiance, of such things as the concept of retirement maximization is more than it is, because we established from one sense it's nothing. So it's got to be something, so it's more than it is to start with. And for the accountant to hold up a book that is surely specious, the amount of $10,000 which does not exist, it's more than that. You can't say, "Well, it doesn't exist." Because now Evil Roy is jumping around the rest of the gang, and don't say, "Well, they're all dumb. They're as dumb as he is." Who's dumb? You can say, "Well, the only sane person is the accountant." Really? Well, now he's part of it. Yeah, but they made him. Give me a break.
Yeah, but he didn't really mean it. Why'd he do it? It is now more than it is. It's got to be, because what it is nothing. That is, they got no money. So why are all these people jumping around, hooping and hollering, shooting their guns in the air, wasting more bullets? Now even slapping the accountant on the back, pouring him a drink, telling him how great it is, how glad they are to have a man that can really keep track of figures, since most of them are too busy outlawing. You don't get much of an education. And so now he's beginning to have fun. So you can say, yeah, they still don't have any money. Really? Well, what the hell's going on? Obviously, more is going on than there is. Now, if you're ordinary, then you might say, well, that just shows people's imagination. No. That's an easy. That's a three-dimensional view. All you're saying is, well, at my level, what seems to be going on is vacuous. Nor is them celebrating the $10,000. They're celebrating nothing because it doesn't exist. Now, that's a three-dimensional view. That's being at the same level as they are. What if it is that there is something more going on, but you can't see it? You simply say, well, there's no $10,000 there. Or behind the concept of retirement maximization is nothing. Well, there's got to be something. Why are they having the man on a national program? Why are people taking notes? Why is the interviewer getting breathless? Why is the man talking, becoming more and more impassioned about the concept of retirement maximization when it's nothing? There's got to be something. Not only something, even though it's nothing, it's more than it is. That's the only way nothing at one level can fly. That's the only way that nothing at one level can exist, is it's more than it is. And it's only those of very, very limited that will mistake the nothing for simply nothing. Because at the ordinary level, the nothing is always something, or it would be noticed. But see, you got to go further, because even the nothing is not only something. Remember where we started tonight? It's more than it is. That's how nothing can be something to start with, because it's all more than it is. Well, let us see if we can push on slightly to another paragraph connected there too, here too. And that has to do with the fact that as the secondary world expands, so does the need for talk do likewise. And there's some examples. They come and go, but we're in the midst here in our lifetime of another prime example. May I remind you all that to speak of older circuits, older areas of the nervous system of man, not only can I make some example out here apparently, or historically a few years back, but recall, it is also within each individual. It's a matter, of course, of great question as to a person here and there having any awareness that the past and out there is all in here right now. But, to make the example easier, taking man with a capital N, I guess because it was pretty sexual and still is, but it still has its same application. No problem with you women understanding what I'm going to point out, because it's common knowledge and talked about. But at older, cruder levels, apparently out there and apparently back in time, but even in our lifetime is what I'm about to get at. At the primary level, men, I guess the most common term was, suffered in silence. They operated a lot in silence, but particularly suffered in silence. But now, as new territories have opened up, as life progresses at the secondary level, we are in the day, more or less, here, especially in our part of the world, the day of the new sensitive man. We can go ahead and laugh, but now remember, let's get that over with. This is no laugh at the expense of the CAT scans. It's no attack on the foolishness of humanity. This is, in fact, at the secondary level, real progress. At the secondary level. But now, as you all know, we're living in the day of, we're talking about now sort of at the ordinary cutting edge of secondary life. It's just the way the city is progressing. We're living in the day of the new sensitive man. Now, bars are full all the way from Detroit to San Diego of good bricklayers, truck drivers who, if they saw an Alan Alden movie come on the TV set in a bar, or they heard somebody begin to talk about the sensitive man, they would go, you know. But don't worry about them doing it out there. Many of you's got it in you. Some of you that may, if you were ordinary, you might be now aspiring to be a new sensitive man, and yet there's a piece of you internally that if you were in the right conditions, and you're around other guys drinking beer and spitting and blowing their nose, and somebody said, what's all this crap about sensitive men? You'd go, yeah. So it still is going on simultaneously, coevally, in time and space. The point being, if we're talking about in the city, where people are expanding the secondary world right at the frontiers, that is where you find new sensitive men who do not any longer suffer in silence. They are not considered to be any less of a man. They will not hesitate now to talk about them. I think it's normally referred to as their feelings. They'll talk about it. They'll whine. They'll even cry. They'll go on the Donahue show and actually cry. You know, guy 6'3", wearing cowboy boots, and cry. It's not right or wrong, but you have got to see that it's not even that historical, as I said, because simultaneously with the description right now, remember what I was pressing this paragraph with, the more the secondary world expands, the more the need for talk does. In the city, at the secondary level of life, the day of the strong, silent man is gradually being outbred. Now, it's still going on. There's no danger that all the good, silent bricklayers look at movies. If you want just a fair indication, since that's, I guess, the intellectual food of our day. The Big Duke's gone, but who else we got? The Bronsons and the Eastwoods and many I'm sure I don't know because it still goes on. But the good old classic that John Wayne was part of, with that kind of thing of the Westerns and a guy that'll come into town, be accused unjustly, rides in, somebody says, he's the guy that killed my brother. And everybody goes, and he wasn't. He didn't bother to say anything. So maybe he's in the bar and somebody says, boy, I don't like people. I smell somebody here from North Dakota. And he's from North Dakota. And he still, he just has a drink. Finally, somebody comes up and says, are you from North Dakota? And he just looks at him. And the guy makes a sign, you know, like he's going to draw his gun. And he just, wham! And he leaves. Now, I would assume whether women even bother to ever go to movies like that on their own that they take, you know. Well, Plus, there are men that feel that way. But this has a wide appeal, and it's nothing new. It was long before Hollywood. You can read back the history of the Romans and the Greeks. There was a sense of the heroic that men, and I repeat one more time, although it was pointed at men, everybody's got to understand, up until recently, all of history, everything that the intellect recorded seemed to be men, 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 men. You know, women got pregnant and had babies, and all the history was run by men, for good or ill. But the heroes, the impressive, the men who made marks on other men, by and large, silent. Men of few words, especially if it came to suffering. You would not find Clint Eastwood to be shot, you know, in the movie, and he still had to fulfill his heroic duties. To suddenly turn around the girl or somebody say, oh, you like your shot there? And he go, yeah, that hurts like hell. No. When it's really, when that kind of suffering in silence, when that kind of suffering in silence is really operating at a sophomoric level, the hero might say, oh, it's nothing. Which, hey. But if it's really operating like at graduate level, he doesn't even respond. Somebody just says, boy, your leg's bleeding pretty bad. He might glance down, but he won't even bother to say it's nothing. I mean, it's nothing. It's pretty heroic. But notice where we're going with this. The real, even a heroic level beyond that, back at that level, is not only to go, it'd be beyond saying, ah, it's nothing, which is heroic enough for many ordinary men or women. But the real heroic would be maybe glance, or even, I guess, a better version would be glance at whoever said it, name your own leg. Glance at the person like, oh, what the hell, you know, give me a shut up. Like, I don't deal with that. I guess that'd really be it, instead of even looking at his leg, but not even answer. But notice, I repeat again, so that you'll see where this is going. As the secondary world of man expands, the need for talk does likewise. The day of silent men and women, but I was using the example as it stands sexually, the day of this kind of silent life, especially heroic or especially suffering, is no longer valid. It is no longer of the same use. It is more and more now. It's not a laugh at the New Sensitive Man or the Alan Aldous. That is more and more what life needs. Women have always, relatively speaking, been more agreeable and primed up to do this. And of late, since they can get on TV and make their voices known, have even joined in helping life expand in this way by making what amounts to accusations at men like, boy, you guys would be better off, you know, and if you'd quit trying to imitate Clint Eastwood and all that crap, and let your feelings out. And of course, that's not going to make it happen, but all of you should see by now that things flow in a certain way, and there are women now being driven to do that, and they are now being driven to be around the kind of men that go, yeah, and it all begins to work. Those type are not, unless there is some sort of anomaly that happens, they're not driven. The kind of woman who might daydream about Alan Alda is not suddenly smitten when she's walking down the street by seeing a guy working in the sewer, that kind of guy, and going, true love, and end up with him having to drink and want to talk about sensitive issues and showing your feelings, because he'd just simply, you know, cold cock her and leave. When things, though, are brought together correctly, now there are men more and more driven to talk. It is, beyond the laughter, remember, what I'm pointing out is this is, at the secondary level, this is progress. This is progress. At the secondary level, not talking about people attempting to do this kind of stuff. And while I am here, I'd like to point out something else. Let's expand it. There is, at a wider level, an aspect to this, that the kind of routine conflicts that go on between diverse groups, nations, religions, well, nations is easy enough, but just large groups of people, the continuing conflicts that go on in life, not just individual now, but between groups to start with, have an aspect that has never been seen, because these kind of 5D x-rays have never been available, so here it comes. So hold it up to the light. It's this, that a part of the basis of the conflicts between diverse groups, different groups, is in how much more or less one of the groups is primed and prepared to talk about stuff than the other one. Take a sec. Now, at the city level, they'll say all kinds of things about nationalistic boundaries, conflicting political opinions, economic theories. I'm just telling you one, based on, if you caught a glimpse of what we've been talking about thus far tonight, that between groups, and they may look like to be completely different groups, they could be different colors, different religions, different nationalities. But I'm telling you, part of the basis is always this today. And more as we're living on this whole planet in a secondary world, that the secondary world is more and more of consequence vis-a-vis the primary world, the scratching for a basic living. The more you're in the secondary world, the more there is validity in why I'm telling you that the conflicts arise in the varying degrees that one group is prepared to talk about stuff, more or less than the other one. It comes out many times, there's still parts of life's body that's kind of an outriding looking at this, part of life's own nervous system, calls it miscommunication. And for some reason, this group can't seem to convey their feelings or what they want out of life to their neighbors. And their neighbors, they end up and looked at from an outside view, this is ridiculous. It's just, they're not talking the same language. And nobody knows what to do about it, or else come up with these ideas like, what we actually need is literally a common language. And I'd do it. Or a common religion, or no religion. Part of it is what I'm telling you. It's varying degrees, varying stages of development of the secondary world in the groups. And one of them is at the secondary level. It's further advanced. It's more willing. One group is more of a new, sensitive guy than the other group. You got one group is more of an Alan Alda, and the other group's more of a John Wayne. And that's the basis, part of the basis of their, quote, conflict. And they can't recognize it. Of course, any of you that's really good, you ought to, should be able to see that that is also an operational definition of civilization or of being civilized. This is the degree to which individually, internally, a person is primed and prepared to talk to himself, more or less, but to talk to himself about his drives, his desires, his behavior, and his restraints, so that there's not that internal conflict amongst his own various groups. Because being civilized is being prepared to talk to oneself. Talk about behavior, talk about control, talk about the possibilities of modifying one's behavior, talk about the need not to go out and act in this kind of primary, crude, bricklaying type manner. I'm a modern man. I'm sensitive. I'm intelligent. I can't do that. There might be some little piece of me that wants to do that, but my God, I'm an MBA. Can't do that. Since I was using the proper example of men, the capital N, the sexual term, you might also note individualist ability to talk more or less to oneself about stuff, yourself, behavior. That is still one of the apparent, at city level, conflicts, points of contention between men and women. As I already mentioned, of women nowadays, at least in public, well, generally, you know, of encouraging men, and men encouraging each other, men encouraging themselves. Yes, I should talk more. No sense me being like my father. He got ulcers, and I bet you part of it was he used to sit around the house, and he'd get mad, and he wouldn't say anything. I know he was mad, but he wouldn't say anything. He'd just get up and go outside and spit. Or he'd go down the street and have a beer. But he wouldn't get mad. Well, he wouldn't say anything, and that's not good. I'm going to talk about my feelings. But still, being this gradual process, you still have women continually, not that they're right or wrong, but I was just trying to get you to see that there is a energy basis of this. Of women saying, well, men, part of the problem that I can't get along with men or that relationships are so tenuous and so trying at times is men won't talk to you. I end up with men, so many men still want to be that big old strong silent type. Or I'll say, what's bugging you? And he'll say, nothing, and leave me alone. And Donahue and all of his guests, or Oprah, I'm just using all this, you understand, metaphorically, if not symbolically, because it is now parts of life's body coming out through humanity goes, that can't be true. For a man to say, hey, nothing's bothering me, don't talk about it. We know something's bothering. And the kind of people now wired up to say that have lost so much touch with their own, not right or wrong, but so much with their older nervous system that they will deny. They don't understand that there are plural. The world's full of men and women, but still full of men, plenty like that. That's untrue, that accusation. That is, hey, when you say you don't talk about it, you're just playing that old macho role. You're just dying to talk about it. The world's full of men that when they say, a woman says, why have you been quiet all day? Nothing. That was the answer. What's bothering you? Nothing. Well, there may be something bothering him. He may have the horniness for the woman in the next cave or in the next village. But he ain't going to tell her. What good will it do? Maybe he's going to try to hit on her. Maybe he ain't. They ain't going to talk to his wife about it. And she says, wait a minute. You're holding things in. You just don't want to talk. You're trying to play a macho role. And he says, no, I don't want to talk. And she says, it'll hurt you. And he says, no, it won't. And he's telling the truth. And he says, shut up. And she can go away and she could suddenly call into a talk show, if they had them over there, she'd say, my husband is really suffering over something because he won't talk about it, and I know he's dying to, and it's not true, not the type I'm talking about. He does not want to talk about it, and there is nothing to talk about, as far as he can turn. If she says, and he's going to suffer over this, and the psychologist, coom disc jockey at the other end, saying, yes, I'm sure he will, but let's assume the disc jockey psychologist is a new sensitive guy, and he's saying, yes, that's true. That kind of thing will kill a man. There are plenty of men that won't kill. You understand, at the three-dimensional level, his denial that there's anything to talk about, or he wants to talk about anything that's bugging him, his is closer to being correct than the accusation, which is more up to date on a wider level of saying, well, that's not the way you should be. Because that is where the future is headed. But the world is still full of men. If somebody says, you'd be better off, why don't you ever watch any of these movies about sensitive men and how much better they get along? And the world is still full of men that think, Jesus Christ. You know, I'd die if I did that. I'd have to make it. I got nothing to say. And, of course, nowadays, as all of you should also know, not just women, but the prevailing general city psychological level, denial. You know, that's proof. But the more that you are dealing in the secondary world, where it expands and is fed by words, to accuse somebody of something, for a man, you're just being fake macho. You really won't talk about this. You're all upset. No, I'm not. Denial. We got him. The world's full of men that if they would answer, that was the truth. That was more correct to them than otherwise. Well, you're just going to hold it in, make yourself sick. I'm not holding anything in. I mean, you might hold me something big in, like, is something bothering you? You think, yeah, I would like to, you know, screw your sister or the girl down the street. He ain't going to tell her, and it's not going to hurt him to hold it in. Contrary, if we're not talking about those kind of people, he knows it's going to hurt him if he says that, because she's probably going to hit him with something or sue him, you know, divorce him. For her to say, well, you're to let it out and talk about it, you'll feel better. He knows that's a damn lie. That I will not feel better if I were to say that. And so the general answer, if she says, well, now something's bothering you. So let's say that's the only thing he thinks, well, is there? Or maybe just enjoying things. Well, I wish I hadn't got married when I was 15. And but he's not about to tell her that now for whatever reason. And so her to say, well, now there's something bothering you. And if he thinks and he tries to talk to himself, so he's trying to talk to himself. And he's thinking, well, is there? And he might think, yeah, I wish I wasn't married. I mean, it's no big deal. He wishes that maybe 100 times a day. And she says, well, tell me about it. You know, come on, be sensitive. And as far as he's concerned, there's nothing to tell. I mean, he tried his best to think, well, why would she ask me that? All right, I don't want to be married. But he's not about to tell her that because it's no big deal. And she said, well, it'll eat at you, whatever it is. You know, and plus, your denial is proof that there's something you won't talk about. All right, now back. Don't lose your way. The future on this planet right now, the immediate future, you're in the midst of it, is that is of less and less value at all. That men and women, but I was trying to use a good example, which I think worked if you people don't stop there and think that you got the point already. It's not all that hard to see. But the point is that talk is of increasing value, necessity. In the days of silent heroes, the days of just action, are quickly, and if you're good, they are gone. If I don't want to give some of you the blues that may still be engaged in working in sewers and being bricklayers, at least up here. The day is quickly vanishing. That the day of action won't get it. You have got to have action and thinking of action, or else you don't even have a fully operational, secondary, city-based human being that you've got to be considering thinking of action in addition to action, which is another definition of being civilized. Then it gets to the point that there are many, 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 many cases that from a three-dimensional view, that thinking of action becomes all that's necessary. Do you follow? Such as the concept of retirement maximization. And it turns out that in one sense, there is no such thing. I mean, it's a bunch of words the guy says. It's a concept. He's got a book and he holds it up and it's entitled that. So you can say, well, there is. But you listen and you think, well, what is it? And it's nothing. I mean, is this going to give me more money? No. Is it going to make me retire earlier? No. And the best you can hear, the very best, I said a little common sense, but the very best you hear, if it sounds like anything new, is this guy took words, ideas that you already knew and kind of rearranged them. Like you had a pile of blocks and it was a Sesame Street and some little Muppet just ranged around and said, it's a new concept. And you think, well, all right, you know. Who wants to pick on the Muppets? So if the guy says, it's the new concept, and you listen, you think, well, it's as new as anything else. It's simply a rearranging of verbs, nouns, letters. That's the concept. That is, in a sense, tied to the examples I just using, that men and women, people, have to talk more and more. And there's nothing foolish. There is no room for criticism. That is the expansion now in the secondary world. That is the source of energy. That is the source of new matter. Because although, from one view, the retirement maximization is nothing, it is something. Once it's said, you can't say, well, it's nothing. It's a hollow idea. Let's don't get into that. Don't start down that road unless you're prepared to really get the cerebral grooves. To say it's a hollow concept, if it's a concept, it's a concept. Now you can call it a hollow concept. Somebody else could call it a green concept. Somebody else could call it a tall concept. Somebody could call it a warm concept. You can call it anything you want to, but once it's said, it's something. It is a movement of energy, and it serves some purpose. If you never hear, of course, this one already serves some purpose because I already picked it up as an example. Even I'm spreading the virus, see? So it amounted to something. And you missed. You want to see if I can turn a phrase or not? You missed the whole thing. If you don't realize that although it's nothing, it's something. It is now a new something. Retirement maximization. It has a sound to it. And to say, well, it amounts to nothing just because it's nothing, tut tut. Mentioning that there is a real operational way to look at being civilized as an adequate and even an increasing amount of talking to oneself, that you do not have two groups in you. You could look at it as being the primary group and the secondary group, of them having conflict on the basis that one of them wants to, is prepared to, talk more about itself, its desires, than the other one is. And it leads to a kind of conflict. Groups actually out there go to war on the basis, that I'm telling you part of the basis, is that one of them was prepared, was already wired up to talk more than the other group. And it's seen as failure to communicate or miscommunication internally. This happens, but when it is operating at the normal, general, middle of the bell curve bourgeoisie in the city level, people are becoming more civilized the more they talk about themselves. That is, the more that they are talking, the more that they are operating in the secondary world as opposed to the primary world. Because the more you do that, the less you're going to have aggressive sexual activity, rapes, the less you're going to have robberies. You're simply going to have less civilized behavior the more you have individuals internally talking to themselves on that basis. I was going to point out to you that to pursue a revolutionist path, in a sense, we try to refer to it around here. You have to up the stakes. It's like turning that merry-go-round, another spiral. That it's not just talking more that is needed at the secondary level, but that it's like a neo not talking to oneself. You got to put that in quotations at least. A neo not talking to oneself. It's not a revision back to trying to do an imitation of John Wayne. Or a good silent hero of any kind, you can't go back. Remember, we already established that the past got no future. But it is a kind of neo not talking about oneself. So if you see the strong silent, the non-communicative, the primary world, in other words, of men, with a little M, and with big M's if you want sexually, but of this silent world, you progress up into the secondary, into the blossoming of humanity as a whole, into the civilized development of man, into the secondary world. And then you just talk, 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 more talk, more talk. More talk is needed constantly. But then past that, while you're alive in one lifetime, the neo, or the stage beyond that, I was going to suggest you would be a kind of neo not talking. not a revision back to the primary, and I won't do, of course, but it's on past, just the need to talk. Which can, again, I can use that every popular example, the need to tell what kind of guy you are. Because that's the kind of civilized talk that's going on between groups that are helping expand in the secondary world and between an individual and his uncivilized self, is you keep saying what kind of guy I am. Well, I'm not the kind of guy to steal just because I'm hungry. I'm not the kind of guy to try to heal my best friend's wife just because he's out of town. Or especially after I get a few drinks and somebody on a date says, I don't feel like having sex with you. Whatever it is, the uncivilized behavior is you are inclined to talk the individual to oneself, and it marks off some area. It has some impact. Beyond the ordinary city level of civilization would have to be an area, I suggest, if this has any validity, of where you do not have to talk to yourself, but it's a neo-level. It's not a paleo not talking to oneself. It is a neo not talking to oneself. That you do not have to say what kind of guy you are. I don't mean to other people, because you're supposed to be beyond that already. But you don't have to tell you what kind of guy you are. For several reasons. Of course, the two obvious ones are, is you know what kind of guy you are, and you don't know what kind of guy you are. So, you got it covered. Two minutes? 3 minutes? Well, how about this? I'll grab another quick one. You remember we were talking also about the physical reality, as it's called, in the ordinary world, classic physics, and even us mentioning how every time people talk, something is lost. That is the energy slash of info, that it cannot be completely transferred from one person to another. And I was even using examples of how all talk is seeping over into the EPU. About this grand old example of scientists saying, our work, our theoretical, beautiful work, has been misconstrued, misused by the government. They built an atomic bomb out of my beautiful equation. There is another aspect. 2 minutes, there. There is one more that may seem far removed from the hallowed halls of the Livermore Laboratory and the Manhattan Project. But how about this? There is a reality that has to do with the continuing use of an attraction to gossip. Taking gossip to be incomplete information about something, someone, some occurrence. But notice, everyone gossips. Everybody loves gossip. Why else do all the great institutions condemn gossip? They love gossip, but I'm going to tell you why. People don't know. I mean, it's childish kind of explanations of, well, I like gossip, or some people do because they like to see the mighty fall. They like to see the dirty underwear on the famous people and all that. Let me suggest the reality, the energy reality behind that, is the passing along of gossip results in info being continually altered because it is a mutation to start with. Assuming I'm just taking gossip as ordinary people call it. It got no morality judgment to it. But gossip is always something that is either an outright lie, but at the very best, gossip is something you shouldn't say because you had some sort of private access to it, or you're not telling the exact truth, which nobody can anyway. We already established that you cannot have a complete transfer of energy. But gossip is even recognized by perhaps those involved that there is some serious mutation, some spin, whether we meant to or not, on the facts. That's why it's gossip. That's not why it's considered information. Everybody knows that there's a difference between information, that'd be on the news. If it's gossip, it's in the Inquirer, or you talk about somebody else. But gossip, the attraction to it, the widespreadness of it, is it is a continuing conveyance of altered energy. It continues to produce new bastard ideas, new bastard children, because, from the ordinary view, it started out already askew. It started out already crippled. It started out lame, one-eyed. And so the retelling of it, it keeps getting worse and worse. That is, it keeps getting more and more mutated. Gossip produces all kinds of new love children ideas. It produces new opinions that seem to have nothing to do with the original gossip. It produces new beliefs, new concepts, and it produces, of course, new gossip. Well, we're completely out of tape now. What happens when we run out of tape? Tell me again. You have to retrain me. Is everything stopped now, or you just can't get on cable and all that, right? Okay. Well, I wanted to put a little epilogue. We'll consider that was the end of it. You got an epilogue? I just wanted to say something to people. I received a few comments, notes, regarding my use of sometimes of calling this TKS, or this kind of stuff. And I want to tell you, I don't appreciate it. I've had some comment of people suggesting that TKS that I must originally had in mind, instead of this kind of stuff that I was probably thinking of or inferring originally, this kind of SHI, you know what. And I'd like to say that I do not appreciate people attributing the use of that kind of profanity to somebody of my spiritual fucking stature.
That concludes this talk. Be sure to visit us at jancox.com, where you can search through 3,000 talks for topics of interest, or just leave us a message.